The Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Special edition of Flashpoints, the future of marijuana, medicinal and recreational. We'll feature some of the leading experts on all aspects of the use of cannabis, including breakthroughs in its healing powers, the use of CBDs, the importance of organic cultivation, knowing what you're buying when you head out for your local dispensary, and the current and future legal issues that will naturally follow legalization. I'm Miguel Gavilan Molina, with Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I'm Miguel Gavilan Molina. Last week at the Arlene Francis Center in Santa Rosa, Flashpoints convened a panel of key experts in all aspects of the use and distribution of cannabis. Our distinguished panelists presented compelling information about scientific breakthroughs in its healing powers, about the importance of organic cultivation, about knowing what you're buying when you head out for your local dispensary, and an in-depth look at the current and future legal issues that will naturally follow legalization.
This is Miguel Gavilan Molina. I'm here with my executive producer, Dennis Bernstein, from Pacifica Radio, and I'm also here with the La Raza Cannabis Association Steering Committee. I'm just going to give you a little background on the need and why we came together here. I came out of the fields of California, what I call the fields of misery. And as a child working in the fields and basically working as an indentured servant and watching my parents toil in the fields, and growing up in a chicken coop, I decided that when I got older, I would try to change that. Not much has changed, very little has changed since that time. This year in April, after 60 years of trying, the United Farm Workers finally got the governor of California to sign a safety workers bill, which meant that we got to have toilets in the fields, you know, porta potties, and we also got to have fresh water and shade. Up to this year, in the last 5 years, 15 farm workers died in the fields of California because of heat and other related situations. Of course, it's never going to make Time Magazine. You'll never see it in mainstream. So I was really concerned about that. In the last 20, 30 years, I traveled up and down the state, sometimes with my friend Chad Ray and others, covering all the festivals, summertime festivals and so forth, which were really cannabis music festivals. And I began to become concerned because there was little presence of, you know, what I call La Raza. And I shared some of that with my friend partner here, Jonathan Melrod, and we became concerned. And it wasn't until a couple of months ago that Omar Figueroa, one of our panelists that is coming here, I hope he shows up, he's the legal expert on this field, defense attorney, said, hey, there's a big gap here. And we started talking, and I said, you know, I've been to some grows here in California, 500, you know, plants, up to 1,000, even some bigger. And I began to notice that a lot of the cultivators, a lot of the farm workers, a lot of them were from Mexico, Spanish-speaking. And when I started talking to them, and they started telling me the conditions, no benefits, some living in tents, you know, sleeping bags under trees and working for 10 bucks an hour, I became a little concerned and outraged. In speaking with Omar Figueroa, we said, you know what, Miguel, we need to do something. And from that, I said, well, we need to bring people together. So from that, the idea started floating around about forming some kind of collective, some kind of group, an association to represent what I call La Raza. And the reason we decided La Raza, because it's more encompassing. When we say Latino, you know, it's people from Latin America. Well, I've always said that Emiliano Zapata and Pancho Villa, Mexican revolutionary leaders, were neither Latino or Hispanic. They were indigenous. And I, as a Chicano, am an indigenous person. So I said, you know, Latino and Hispanic is too restricting. We need to encompass La Raza. And La Raza includes everybody, all indigenous native peoples. So it's more encompassing. So we decided, the steering committee, to form La Raza Cannabis Association. And right now, we're in an infancy stage. So that said, afterwards, we'll do a little Q&A, and I'll go more into detail on what that means and how people can join, how people can support that. But for right now, I'm going to read a mission statement, just the first paragraph, to give you a background. And then I'm going to introduce the distinguished panel of our guests here, who represent basically the whole spectrum of the cannabis movement, not just here in California, but in the country. That said, the mission statement of La Raza Cannabis Association. Legal marijuana is today's fastest growing industry in the United States. If the current trend towards legalization continues, cannabis may surpass the booming organic food industry. The U.S. market for legal cannabis grew 74% in 2014 to $2.7 billion, up from $1.5 billion in 2013. Reports project that by 2019, all the states' legal cannabis markets combined will make for an overall market worth of almost $11 to possibly $20 billion annually. La Raza Cannabis Association pledges to act as a preeminent organization protecting the rights of people of color, in particular, La Raza business, growers, employees, agricultural workers in the cannabis industry. The new cannabis industry is opening up for lucrative opportunities for independent cultivators, business operators, dispensary owners, laboratory testers, and importantly, agricultural workers who plant, cultivate, and harvest a crop. LRCA will represent and protect the interests of all Raza and all people of color striving to enter them and participate on equal footing in this newly legalized and highly profitable cannabis world. That said, and I'd like to take an opportunity to introduce our distinguished panel, myself and my executive producer, Dennis Bernstein from Flashpoints. We'll be asking questions after, but I'm going to give each of our distinguished panelists an opportunity to present themselves and talk a little bit about their work in the cannabis industry. And all of us here are trying to lift the prohibition of cannabis and enter the new world. We're going to start our conversation here, and I'm going to ask each of the panelists to talk a little bit about their work. We're going to give them a few minutes, and then we're going to start the questioning with my partner, Dennis Bernstein. Martin?
Thanks very much, Miguel. So I'm a journalist and an activist within the marijuana industry, you say. We used to call it just a community.
But things are changing quite dramatically. To cut right to the chase, we're on the cusp of, it would appear, legalization in California. What will that mean for people who've toiled in the shadows of a repressive drug war for years, if not decades? What will it mean for consumers? What will it mean for medical patients? It's not quite clear, but to understand sort of where we're going, I think we have to look back on where we've been. I've done that as a historian over Smoke Signals and other books. And just to kind of recap briefly, you know, cannabis came to the Western Hemisphere on the slave ships, came out of seeds. And I wrote about that in Smoke Signals, coming to South America from the Portuguese colonies in Africa. But it also turns out in Mexico, the seeds came over on slave ships as well. And it's something I wasn't aware of until recently. A historian brought it to my attention. That's how the cannabis seeds first came over. And marijuana proliferated in Mexico to the point where it's mistaken as an indigenous plant. It wasn't originally. Miguel mentioned the Mexican Revolution, the first great social revolution of the 20th century. And one of the side effects, you might say, was a great deal of immigration from Mexico to the southwestern part of the United States. And right from the get-go, when we speak about legalization, we're also speaking about prohibition. We're talking about prohibition And right from the get-go, it was always not about public health. It was not about protecting people. It was about controlling people. It was about social control, and it remains so to this day. It was a very insightful commentary from sociologist, Curtis Meres, who commented about how that the arrests and convictions of Mexican workers early in the 20th century for marijuana possession were most concentrated during the years of and in the areas with the highest level of labor organization and action. And that's not coincidental. And that's an example of what I'm saying, social control. If you can arrest people who are involved in workers' movements under the pretext of a recreant or a medicine that they're consuming, well, it makes it look like it's not for their political activity, but just for this, for breaking the law. In 1914, Utah was the first state, to ban marijuana. That year also, in El Paso, Texas, they banned marijuana because who was using it? It was not about what it did to people, but it was about the people who were using it. That was always the target of the laws. But to flash forward today, what does it mean if cannabis prohibition has been an instrument of social control, in essence, all along? What does it mean that prohibition appears to be giving way now? We're segueing into an era of legalization, possibly. What does that mean in terms of that social control element? Well, I think it means that one way to look at this is that, you know, cannabis legalization, even if it would be fully implemented federally across the country, doesn't necessarily change the social dynamics, the social disparities, because that's what social control is all about. It's protecting the status quo. It's maintaining social inequality, economic inequalities. So if prohibition is lifted, I don't think that will change. And I think it's the people who've been really struggling under prohibition. And it's always a double-edged sword. We can make decent money, too, if we do it right. But I think the challenge will be on these communities, much more so than the big money moving in from Wall Street into the cannabis industry, which definitely is happening. So I'll leave that as an opening statement. I'm sure we can go into other things.
Thank you so much, Martin. Now I'd like to reintroduce Jorge Cervantes.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me here. My role has been mainly as a cultivator and helping other people learn how to cultivate cannabis. And I've been in this for about 30 years, closer to 40 now, actually, but publicly for the last 32 years. And I've seen the entire drug war, what it's done, and the devastation, and it's so refreshing to see the change coming. But as the change comes, like Martin was saying, they're still going to try to keep us under control and control all the local ordinances and laws and state laws and stuff. So they're going to limit things, and there's still going to be a black market and all kinds of different ways to grow cannabis within those different markets. So basically, that's what I've been working hardest on is the cultivation aspect. And not just in this country, but there's a lot of other countries where cannabis is being cultivated all over the world. I also live part of the year in Spain, and there it's a huge cultivation capital of Europe, actually. It's kind of funny. They grow so much there, but the weather's great. So we're going to see cannabis growing everywhere. And I hear a lot of talk about from people thinking that the great big companies are going to try to take over cannabis distribution and cultivation and whatnot. Well, that could be true, but I also think that they're, you know, have their eye on it. But we definitely have, a whole culture developed here, and we can perpetuate that. And we really don't need those great big guys. But it's up to us to make sure that doesn't happen. So I guess that's my opening statement here. Thank you.
Thank you, Jorge Cervantes. We've been waiting for Omar Figueroa to get here, and right now he might be lost in the clouds. That said, I'm going to ask someone who I've been working very close with, and that is Eli Mel Rudd to come up and give a briefing on the new changes, the legal aspect of cannabis and where it's at today. And just to give you a little clarity, and hopefully Omar will come for the rest of the presentation. Eli, thank you so much.
Hi, so I'm not an attorney, but I have been studying the law a lot. I've talked a lot to Omar, and I can briefly, the new licensing setup is, I mean, obviously, a lot of people probably know the Jerry Brown just signed into law the new medical marijuana regulations for the state of California. So the first thing to kind of think about is, first of all, they haven't actually written any of the regulations. They've just created the licensing scheme. The thing to remember is that come 2016, with any sort of legalization bill, it could completely change the licensing and the regulations. However, if the licensing scheme continues to be what it looks like, what Jerry Brown just signed into law, there's 17 different types of licenses that will control everything from having a nursery to a manufacturing facility to cultivation to a dispensary. There are lots of different types of licenses. They've tried to limit vertical integration in order to give a competitive, to allow smaller players to compete is the idea behind the bill. Basically, if you're a cultivator, you can also manufacture. If you're a manufacturer, you can also cultivate. If you're a dispensary, you can either own up to 3 dispensaries and cultivate and manufacture, or you can have a chain of dispensaries. So that's one licensing system. There's a nursery license. There's all kinds of licenses. But what they've tried to do is make it so that you can, so that they've limited the ability to do the whole vertical. So basically, for a cultivator, there's small licenses, medium